here today. My name's Beth Fisher. I'm from Bridging Commercial Magazine, and I'm with
Nick Russell, Sales Director of TAB.
And
a very nervous Richard Nordgreen from Proceed Capital.
No need to be nervous at all.
Welcome.
Can you tell us a bit more about you, your company, and give us a quick elevator pitch?
Okay, I can certainly do the first one. So Richard Nordgreen, Proceed Capital, we are a mezz lender. We actually won Mezzanine Lender of the Year at the BNC Award, which was one of life's real highlights. And elevator pitch, we do loans from 100k to 1.5 million, so we're really servicing SMEs, and which we feel is one of the least serviced part of the market, because it's a lot of hard work to do small loans, but you have to do the same amount of work as a really big loan.
Sure. And do you find that, so in that sense, you don't have that much competition?
I think the big difference between this space and, say, the senior is pricing is less of a focus. It's all about deliverability. So there are some other really good guys out there. But to be honest, the market is much bigger than I think we all have resources to do. So deliverability, are you going to do what you say you're going to do? That's what matters most.
How did you, just for people who don't know, how did you get into the industry?
Well, so Proceed, actually, we were a development and asset manager, and then we became a fund.
Okay.
So we're sort of a property first kind of outfit, so we're a bit more hands-on. And so we've been as a company for like 15 years, even though we've only been lending for 4 years. So
okay.
We're much less spreadsheety and a bit more sort of kicking the bricks.
Nice. Mm. Who have you found has been kind of your, do you have a mentor?
Honestly, no. But
I think you're our first person today who said no. Why is that?
Probably says
no
a lot
one's
about
had a great
ego.
Influence on your career.
Well, I mean, I take a lot of guidance from my family, but it's what we're doing at Proceed is it's not a trodden path. So it's not like you go and speak to someone and you go, how did you do this? Like the first loan we ever did was the first loan the company's ever done. Like none of us had been lending in this way before. So it's not like any of us have been following a roadmap or anything like that.
Sure.
And, you know, the only people we could take advice on would be competitors who probably aren't going to say, here's what we learnt. And so, no, I wouldn't say there's been mentors in such a way, but advice of course from everyone, but even then my parents are like, you should work less hard and that sort of thing, so I'm like, thanks, but you know, food on the table and that sort of stuff. So
yeah,
it's probably not a very hashtag inspirational message, but you know, it's the truth,
and I think fully self-sufficient.
Yeah, fair
well,
enough.
You know, that's a horrible way to sound, but just, if there's a mentor out there, delighted, please come on board, and I will credit you in all future podcasts. That'd
good
be
tonight.
Delightful.
Are you? What would kind of words of wisdom or advice would you give to any kind of new introducers in the space?
Complete focus on deliverability. I think in the mezz space where we are, obviously, which is second charge lending, there's been quite a backlog of some high net worth can be a mezz lender. Like literally you could have someone who's sold the textiles business and suddenly they've got £5 million and they can become a mezz lender.
Yep.
But those same guys can be very chop and changey.
Yep.
And some minutes they've got money, some minutes they don't. And also even the decision making. So at the moment, given where we are politically and economically, without fail, once a week, I'm getting a call from a broker because the mezz lender they've been looking to rely on has had to fall away for whatever reason. And that all boils down to the decision making behind the financing. Like all the mezz lenders out there, and this is true for senior lenders as well, like they kind of want to do the deal. But often it's the person who actually press yes or no for, am I sending that bank transfer? They're the ones who can suddenly have a change of heart. So if you've got an outfit with long-term money, with a clear strategy, who do what they say they're going to do, seeking that out is far more important than pricing and, you know, sort of surprise fees and all that sort of stuff. And like transparency is like really important, but it's kind of about, are you going to do what you say you're going to do?
Do you think brokers now have to ask a lot more questions than they may have done in previous years? When working with maybe a new lender?
I think at this time in the market, like anyone who comes on here and says otherwise is lying. It is a difficult time. Sales are slow. Cash flow management for borrowers is slow. You're having to be a lot more precise. Like I've just come from a meeting with a developer and he was just really honest and sensible about it, saying, look, we're having to manage our exits, decrease the margin we're looking for to sort of just take a more prudent stance. And so for how does that transition to borrowers? Well, brokers, they need to be seeing how different parties are going to react in difficult times. And like at the start of a development funding, you should already be thinking about you know, what's my exit? Like, actually, am I going to put a sales bridge in there? Is it going to be like a cross scheme, so like a mixed scheme, which we're using in quite a lot of our underwriting? How many units have you got to sell at a sensible price before you can then put it on a term loan? And like, that might be how the exit goes. So I think, yes, brokers have got to ask more questions, but they've got to be more intelligent. Like, in the same way that estate, like lazy estate agents, they, like, I don't see it as a bad thing when estate agents are going out of business, because too many of them were in business, and you could be a lazy estate agent and still make money. And it's the same in broking. You could be a lazy broker, go and speak to your same lenders and like go and get paid 1 or 2% of the loan amount, which is a ludicrous amount of money for a phone call. And actually you need to have add value. And where you get brokers who do that, guess what? They get the repeat business, and people really want to work with those brokers because they've got trusted relationships. So just any laziness across the market just is fine in a bull market, but when things get tricky, it just falls over.
Really interesting.
So just to tap into the fact that obviously you're lending Mezz, which is a slightly riskier end of the market to lend against, hence why pricing is always slightly higher. With slight uncertainty in the market, are you looking at your product and sort of reweighting your risk on to certain developers as a result? Have you sort of slightly pinched your loan to GDV covenants at all?
Well, so the reason we're called Proceed is because we want to seed property developers with that risky bit of riskier bit of money. But to be honest with you, since we've been lending for 4 years, our appetite to back at the seed stage has grown less. Is less. So, for example, a first-time developer, we're super cautious about, unless they've got a fantastic delivery team and perhaps they've got a good guarantor there, or there's a bit of cross securitization.
So they're well capitalized themselves as well.
Exactly. Yeah. But really, we're having to take the view that we've reined in the LTV that we'll lend to. We're still you know, more bullish than most on the loan to cost front.
Where do you stand out? Actually, I'm interested. Where do you stand in your lending parameters?
I mean, our average of our book at the moment is around 92-93%. We do go higher for the right deal. Yeah. And we're funded to go north of 75% loan to GDV, but we don't really, just because in this market, you need to build in a bit of price. And frankly, because we're getting so much more business now, we don't need to go chasing the north of 75% deals when, you know, we're getting plenty at a high 60 or low 70. So.
And easier to refinance if you need to at the next stage.
Yeah, and it's, but again, it comes back to my point about the sort of the hybrid model, where at a 73% loan to value, there's not many sales bridges or buy to lets they're going to take out, including the interest. So we have to sell a few and then do that hold. But then it depends on how that developer is capitalized, because the developer has got some expensive equity, which, and this was something that I only learned like a year or so into lending, like, very few developers have their own balance sheet cash.
Yep.
Like, when they're putting in their equity bit and their 10% of cost, like, very rarely is that all theirs.
Well, and a lot of the time it's just 10% of that 10%.
Well, exactly. And I think, you know, finding out how that equity coming in supporting a developer, how that funded is critical, because that can put whole different pressures on them and their ability to hold assets if needs be.
And particularly like, if they've got a coupon and a profit share, and they're paying you a coupon and the senior a coupon, next thing you know, I mean,
but then
how they're actually making money.
Exactly, but yeah, they're the one having to put the PG on the line.
Correct.
So yeah, it's quite an intense time, I think. But as long as you can keep underwriting sensible loans, hopefully all the people doing that will still be here in a few years' time.
Of course.
What do you, what would you like to see change in the market in 2020?
I was going to say a really political thing there, and I managed to stop myself. This is obviously a first-time podcast.
So we've had a few political answers. Don't worry,
okay,
it's fine.
I'm going to shy away from that.
Please do.
What would I like to... I mean, to be honest with you, like, I don't think the market per se is in that bad a position. I think there's healthy competition, particularly at the senior level. Do I want to load more competition at the Mezz level? Guess what? No. So I don't really want that to change.
Fair enough.
In my bit, I think it's okay. Like, we're in a bit of a weird stage because our competition is actually the high net worth individuals, the Monaco Daves, as I always refer to them, who one minute he's down in Monaco and he's got 500 grand to lend you, but the next minute he's going through a divorce, or he's read the FT How to Spend It article and then they stop, and then he just doesn't want to give you the money, or he wants the money halfway through the build. But like, I don't, that's a creative problem and there's a friction there that we can help solve. So like, I don't see that as a problem for my business.
So a well-capitalized lender who's in it for the long haul, you would advise all developers and brokers 100%. To be talking and understanding what's behind that lender.
like, so I think perhaps that's the answer. Like, actually, there being a bit more of an agenda of transparency on funding and that sort of thing, and like, have you got the money to do it? So, like, one something we pride ourselves on is we'll always, if we offer terms, it's because we've got the money in order to do it. And also, like, again, with the rise of, say, some of the newer crowdfunding lenders, like, do they have the terms, do they have the funds to go and do it regardless? Like, is there a risk that they might pull out halfway through? And as a MES lender in particular, we're very...
Is there a balance sheet to lean on? We're very nervous about that.
Or, like, you know, there have been things probably more historically than nowadays whereby the build, the drawdown for the build finance has been raised in chunks. But therefore, if you didn't get that, then it wasn't there to be done, and hence the senior can pull out. And like another strange term you see in a lot of senior lending facilities is the fact that it's repayable on demand. So the senior can just have a change in their underwriting position or whatever it is, or typically their funding up north, and then suddenly that pulls it. And as a MES lender, I'm completely aligned to the developer, because in order for me to get any money back, it needs to get built. And if there's a risk of it not getting built, then that's something that, you know, we need to be alive to. But again, it's not, it's no one really in the industry that's making that decision. It's the, where the money's coming from up north. And to raise that money at the cheap level to go and win the business, you have to offer more and more strict criteria. So it's a self-fulfilling prophecy in a way, like, and that's because of the competition.
I think we're good, unless you've got any other questions.
I don't. Anything you want to add, particularly with you or the business?
I've got a couple of questions. What were you guys hoping for out of A, today, and B, this podcast?
This one in particular?
Yes.
Today, obviously, from the magazine perspective, we're hoping to obviously get more subscribers, and also our reporters are around today and they want to get some industry goss so we can put that into our next couple of issues. So that's our main aim today. And then from this podcast, just to hear a bit more about you and your plans, and I guess a bit more of
the bit more information as well.
We've been trying to find out what I think a key thing in at the moment is the bridging and development industry is built on trust and built on relationships, and therefore people want to know like how you got into the industry, what your intentions are, what your aims are, not just like what your criteria is. And I think that's almost just as important.
I think so.
That's the main thing. And it's great to hear a bit more about the mezzanine industry and how that's working for everyone, because it's becoming more popular, and it probably hasn't in the last few years.
I
think we often hear the same voices in the industry, and we wanted to build this platform to give everyone an opportunity to discuss all different types of finance, different backgrounds, the individuals behind that. Because you often you'll get BDMs going out, and you do the whole sales pitch, but do you get that sort of relaxed environment of why was the business started, the actual ethos behind the business, and then how that business is moving forward? I think it's massively important just for other people to hear.
Sure. I have another question. How much longer can you afford for the sexy Vogue-esque BNC magazine to be free? When are we going to get hit with the charge? I know it's going to be coming. You can't keep banging that thing out with that high quality paper and whatnot, and the style for free. I still can't believe it.
Oh, that's very, very kind. It's going to be free for 2020 and for the foreseeable future. So do not worry about it.
Until it goes digital, fully digital, no paper.
No, I love the hard copy.
Yeah, it is already digital. Okay. Yeah, it's up, but it's the hard copy. It's just something a bit different, and we obviously would welcome as much support as possible on the advertising side, and that's how it's funded. But it's completely impartial, and we want brokers to have access to it. It's a huge education point for people. Thank you so much. Oh,
thank you.
Pleasure.
Thanks.
Your first podcast.
Done.